Even better than I was the last time, baby.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
We back.
I'm good.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm good. Even better than I was the last time, baby. Ooh, 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 ooh.
We back, and 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 we back.
Even better than I was the last time, baby. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Chance, please don't sue us. We are but humble people. Anyway, we're back. Yeah, there's been a lot of changes in the world and in our lives personally since the last time we were both at the microphone. This is The Bleak Outlook. I am your co-host, Andrew, and I'm here with...
his cousin sister, Siobhan.
Yeah. And go back and listen to the first episode to know this is a Jamaican cousin sister thing, not an Alabama cousin sister thing. Our moms are sisters and we were born just a few months apart and we grew up in the same house for a couple of times. So that's why we're very close. But yeah, Siobhan, what's going on?
I have been living life in a pandemic. All right, Elsa, don't sue us. Is it obvious that I'm like looking for attention?
Not too much.
From celebrities?
Actually, being sued by a celebrity would probably do wonders for the pod. I mean, the numbers would shoot up.
I know. They're like, what are these people talking about? Oh, give a listen.
We'd have to shut down the next day because I ain't got lawyer money. I don't know about you, Siobhan. But
that's the thing. If they want to garnish my wages, this is not going to be anything in the account. If you want to deal with the insufficient funds, that's up to you. But... I mean, so let's pick up with what happened after the last episode, which was Race and Art that aired. Then we'll go to pandemic stuff and then the now. So I can start. So after the Race and Art episode, which is 2019 in June, that summer was a really good summer and fall for me. You know, like you have a time in your life when you're already grown, but you're kind of blossoming and you're kind of like coming into your own. There's a lot of things you unpack and get rid of and shed as an adult that you held on to as a teenager and a younger adult. So it was a really good time for me in 2019. And I felt like I was like becoming like myself type of thing. And that stretched all the way to the end of the year. And I was... composing things for the podcast. I had started writing a little bit again, sort of resolving different things in my mind and breaking down walls. It was a good time. And then COVID really shut all of that down. And there was a lot of things that it was like you're going for liftoff and you get grounded. So the before times... I felt like I was poised for something. And I was kind of in mourning for the initial period of the pandemic because it was like I didn't get to realize that. I had, started to join communities and clubs and whatever else, and it was like everything was just dead, which happened for everybody. And right at the beginning of the pandemic, I had a staff member who got sick. It was like the first day that we started masking. And that was, I want to say it was March 21st. And he was dead by the end of the month. So it was very interesting to have to, be standing in my director's office crying and saying like, what do I do about like his employment, because there's all these like, you go into whatever mode and you're like, he's not here and I have to do time cards this Friday. Like, what are we doing? And she was like, I'll take care of it. And through the pandemic, of course, there was, the fear of going out, the fear of touching. If, we all got ultra clean and the family group text was popping, though. I swear, that is the best thing that came out of this pandemic is the family group text on WhatsApp was popping.
Oh, my God. Just messages. That was, like, I'd be in meetings, and then my thing would go off, and then they're like, oh, there's going to be a Zoom tonight. Oh, man. I who's going to be in there?
Who's going to be there?
And then it was just like, it was a rough time, but it was kind of like a joy to that. We probably got together a little more frequently than we normally do. You know, it's like normally like big things, funerals, weddings, auntie birthday every now and then. But for that, like everyone would check in on each other a little more often. And it was kind of cool that people who might not always be there were there. And I was really appreciative of that.
Yeah, that was, that's the part of it that I feel like we benefited from, because we kind of got to know people a little bit more. We talked to people who we honestly wouldn't. And I felt like when we finally did get together, like, I feel like I had a little bit more of a connection with people, because we had actually exchanged words instead of just seeing each other at the house or something like that. So it was like that process of holding on to something and somebody. And it was really, it was therapeutic and it was healing. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciated that part of it. Spring of 2020, I got plants. So whereas before I was a black thumb, the place is full. There's birds of paradise. There's succulents. There's cacti. There's all sorts of stuff in my house now. And on the terrace, I get lavender every year. I have a thyme bush that's been thriving, comes back every year. I plant basil, everything. So now I follow all of these like plant mom like accounts and all this other stuff. Like, what am I going to do for this? You know, what am I doing for my plant light in the winter time? And what are we fertilizing with? And this is the best compost and whatever. So I like that stuff. And I know for people, they had a different experience with the initial part of the shutdown, but to be honest, I really appreciated it because it was just a slowdown. It was, there was no traffic, there was nobody around, and you just got to sit for a while. Even at work, at the hospital, they had canceled all elective surgeries. So we were in the lab and we were kind of like, well, just chill, enjoy the silence, because when these people are ready, they're going to pick back up. So, and I was still going to work every day, so there was still a lot of fear, and there were still people holding doorknobs with paper towels and things like that, and we stayed away from each other for real, like, no joke. But that was the part where, you know, I was getting home at 4:30. And I was gardening with the kids, and we were sitting out in the sun having picnics and stuff like that. So I feel like that life was something I needed. And I think a lot of people felt that way, that they had to slow down, that they were forced to. I know that there's a lot of other things that came out of the pandemic, people losing out on career opportunities, losing loved ones and all this other stuff, but it's just that slice of it where we were forced to halt, which I feel like people are carrying that in certain ways even to now. So further on in the pandemic, and, you know, we stopped washing groceries, we stopped acting so crazy about sanitizing. You know, I know that when mask mandates kind of lifted in certain places, we were like, oh, no, we can't do this and blah, blah. But look, man, if I'm in Target, it's 8:00, ain't nobody around, whatever. It's been okay, like, going through, we have another pandemic on the way with monkeypox and whatever else, so.
But wait, Siobhan, the thing that is, this pandemic never stopped. The first one, we just changed. We just been like, well, this is it. This is what it's going to be. So for like, what are we on? 3 years? We're on year three now?
Season 3.
We've essentially just been in one pandemic that kind of got like broken up. And it's like, you know, this is the early season, mid season, and late season, hopefully, because, you know, we're about to get a spinoff show with monkeypox.
So. Hey! Oh, on HBO Go. What the fuck? But like, for the here and now, because we're not going to call it post pandemic, because ain't no post pandemic. You're just going to deal with it. But for the here and now, I think I've learned that if you want to do something, you're going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you want to make stuff happen, you're going to do it. I remember when we were first recording and it was like, let's get to the recording studio, let's go over your apartment. And it was very much like it had to be a certain way or it couldn't get done.
Oh, yeah. When I had to cover my entire apartment with foam panels because I can't have echo, Siobhan. Like, you know, I do this for work. I have to have the perfect acoustics. I got to put a blanket over the window to limit the amount of bounce back in the audio. And then it just became
an expert.
Yeah. You know, after 2 or 3 years of people being on Zoom and hearing everybody's echoey houses, I think the days of like high fidelity audio, they're not gone by any means. But a lot of people have a lot more leeway not expecting us to sound like we're on NPR.
Yeah. But I also think that we have to get more comfortable with being unscripted. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like I came in with my outline and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And if I don't know what I'm going to say, that's when I get nervous. Because I've always been very good with public speaking. But to riff, that's a fear of mine. So for me not to have what I'm going to say right now,
yeah,
just a open-ended, that's a risk. So I think that's another part of it is just we're taking risks, not on any really significant level, just on a personal level that puts us out there. You know, risk saying something when you know previously you would have stayed quiet.
Yeah.
Speaking up for yourself when you're like, no, I don't think so. I'm not going to do that. So it's been a big change in good ways and bad ways, in ways that we don't know yet because we're still changing too.
Yeah. And like, you know, my experience like the past couple of years has just been twists and turns, and I've kind of gotten into the habit of where I had no choice but to essentially freestyle my entire life because everything that I had planned went out the window on March 13th, 2020. I remember it exactly.
And I'm just going to say one more thing before we get into that. So our guest, Davinia, who you know, got engaged to Andrew not long after the Race and Art episode. They were planning to get married, and it was going to be in Portugal. I had my tickets. I had a dress made. My son, my husband had his suit that was complimentary color. We were ready. We had the whole plan together. It was a 2-week affair. We're going to be in Montreal. Then we're going to be in Portugal. It was a whole big thing. When COVID started, I told Andrew and I also told Davinia, I was like, I don't give a shit what is going on. I'm going to be there. And when things shut down, it just, that was it. But I'll let you continue. Please.
Yeah. Like I actually, the day we recorded the Race and Arts episode, I went and bought the engagement ring that day, but a little inside baseball. Because I knew very early on that I was going to propose to Davinia. Within 3 weeks of meeting her, I told her I loved her and flew her to meet my parents like that same month. And then a few months later, I started ring shopping. And then when we recorded the Race and Arts episode, Davinia and I had been together for 6 months. I ended up having to travel for business, met her family. You know, did the traditional thing, asked for the hand in marriage, all of that. And then a month later, I proposed to her and we set the date. We booked the venue. We told everyone, send the invitations. Like my mom was the same way. My mom had her dress picked out like practically 6 months in advance.
Yep.
And then everything shut down. And then the venue was like, oh yeah, you know, we'll just delay it for a couple of months. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, we can still have it. But, you know, the laws will change, so we might have to have fewer people. And then we're like, I don't think you understand. Andrew is American. He can't legally enter Portugal. Like, it's kind of hard to get married if the groom can't be there.
So we weren't doing that type of wedding yet. That type of Zoom.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of Zoom weddings, but usually the bride and the groom are in the same place. I mean,
yeah. For legal reasons, maybe.
Yeah, so we were supposed to do it then. We postponed it to August. And, of course, you know, COVID was still raging to the point where Davinia and I were actually separated for, 8 months because she had just gotten her job in the U.S. They were sorting her visa, her work visa, and everything was going to be great. And then they stopped processing visas. And she was in England at the time getting her dress. And she couldn't get back into the U.S. And then we were just like, so what do we do now? And I was alone for the first, I'd say, 6 months of the pandemic. And I lived in an area of New York that just happened to be between three hospitals. So as you can imagine, during COVID, the sound of sirens started to really mess with me to the point where I once went 3 days without sleeping because every time I heard the siren, I go, that's another person that's dying. Am I going to end up being in one of these sirens because I have an underlying condition? I live in New York City. My neighbors, I hear them coughing in the hallway, and now I'm putting T-shirts under the door just in case. That's how it was.
It was real.
Terrifying. Yeah.
It was real.
So I'm the type of person, I was always a little bit of, I was the type of person who loves New York, like, unconditionally. Everything that people complain about New York, I say, nah, this is my city. I love it. And then it became to a point where I was like, actually, New York is my prison right now because the things I loved about it was not the apartment that I'm in. It's all right. But the things I love about New York is the randomness of running into a friend on the subway. I didn't take the subway during the first 2 years of the pandemic. Nope. The things I loved about New York was going to places and seeing my friends or going on a date with Davinia. Davinia couldn't even be there with me at the time.
Yeah.
So it was a rough period. And I ended up just leaving. Like, when my lease was up, England had said they'd let people into the country. So I went to England to be with Davinia, and we were together for a while. We thought that her visa was finally going to get processed, and then they canceled her appointment. Jeez. And then my job called me back and said, oh, no, you got to be back here. So I came back to the U.S., and then they told Davinia, actually, it'll be faster if you go and get your visa in Barbados. So I moved to Barbados.
Just like that.
Just like that. You know, moved there for a while. Technically, I applied for the residency there in order for us to be able to legally work. So technically, I'm still a resident of Barbados.
Sweet.
But yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but that's for another episode. We're going to dive into that, believe me.
Yeah.
But yeah, the point of this, the whole thing is like, we've had to make twists and turns at every point of this pandemic. And I don't just mean like me and Davinia. I mean every person on the planet. Mm-hmm. The person I am today is not the person I was in early 2020.
Yeah.
I had to realize that I didn't realize how anxious I was about things until it got to the point where I needed to start doing therapy in a couple of years, like towards the end of 2020. And the difference I had emotionally between like last year and this year is pretty significant. And I have to owe that to like the craziness of the times and how it really forced me to sit down and be with my thoughts and be with my emotions to the point where I had to recognize it's something that I thought about, hey, maybe I should start doing therapy. But it was something that it wasn't a maybe at that point. It was like, I need to talk to somebody professional, because yes, you can turn to family, you can turn to loved ones, you can turn to your clergy or whoever you go to, but the people that love you, their job is to love you. They can't be the ones to help you understand what you really need to know and process. They're not professionals, and it's great to have those people. But sometimes you need to go to someone who actually can help you process and realize what you were going on. I wasn't just upset about the pandemic or being away from Davinia. Through therapy, I realized that I was terrified at the prospect of dying before I got to marry Davinia. Because it's kind of morbid to think, but a thought I had was like, if I get to marry her and my casket says he loved Davinia, at least I made it that far. And that was like a really like uncomfortable thought that I had, and I needed to speak with someone about that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Fast forward, I did end up getting to marry Davinia.
Woo!
We got married in like one of the last marriages in England before their second wave of the pandemic forced another lockdown. And so to the point where that was in late 2020, we didn't have our Portugal ceremony until May 2022, because every time we were going to do it, another wave of COVID would come or another thing would happen where the venue is just like, look, we're going to honor your price, but you got to get married this year. So we were like, well, baby, we're already married. I guess, you know, we paid for everything. We might as well. We
might as well party.
We got a bunch of bottles of wine on a vineyard sitting there unused. Let's invite people. Let's go drink it and enjoy it and be in the sun.
Yep. I guess for me, two things. Shout out to all vulnerable Black men out there in therapy, working out their thoughts and emotions. Cheers to you. Please take inspiration from my brother here. Another thing, that wait for us to be in Portugal, I believe, was worth it. Because the joy and the release that we had in Portugal was, the family was like changed. Mostly because we didn't have to be in the kitchen wearing aprons with our dresses on. We didn't have to serve. Nobody had, like, you know, the cups of Manish water on a tray or something.
Oh, God. No one was arguing about who was going to make the fish to bring to the venue.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Auntie has to make the macaroni and cheese, and nobody else can make the macaroni and cheese. And who's making the juice? And did you get enough liquor? Yeah. Oh, we sent over so-and-so to go get some beer down at the shop.
Which, what kind of beer? Because, you know, Uncle only drinks Red Stripe.
Oh, you, my God, really?
Did you get any white rum? Because, you know, Uncle needs his white rum. Yes.
Jeez. But you know what's funny is, so we're in a very hilly area, and we ended up going to this little coffee shop that was on the hill, and we ended up calling it Top Shop. What was right next to it, there's a little general store. We just started calling it Top Shop. Just because the place, I don't know, was reminiscent of Jamaica for us. It felt like just the color scheme, the way that the roads were. We're like, damn, why aren't we doing this in Manchester?
Yeah, basically, like, I just came back from Jamaica last week, and the feeling that you get in the area of Portugal where you're in just reminded me so much. Like, when I was in Jamaica again, I was like, this is basically Portugal without the cobblestone.
Yeah.
And the tile. Like, it's the same thing. We got bauxite instead of cobblestone and tile.
Which was very lucrative in its day.
Yeah. And that's another episode, Siobhan, you know, because Portugal, you know, they kind of invented that whole transatlantic exchange of people, you know. So,
however, who is it? They eat the most codfish in the world, and Jamaica second.
Yeah.
So we're not too far behind, my brethren in Christ. Oh, and speaking of which, we're recording today on Jamaican independence.
Bullet.
Boop, 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 boop. Why are the... I'm going to say it's fireworks. It's not gunshots. We're nonviolent people.
Exactly, yeah.
It's fireworks.
And for the editing process, insert dancehall horn here.
Yes. She's a dancer queen for life. That's a hot song, still.
But yeah, the pandemic was just a wild time. Obviously, it was rough for everyone in the world, I think, for me personally too, because, you know, I loved getting married, but it also reminded me that there were people who were supposed to be at our wedding who ended up passing during the time, not because of COVID, but, you know, 2 years of medical backlogs and health changes and just stress.
Yeah.
It takes a number on people, and it's not just the millions of people globally who died. It's the millions of people who missed out on pivotal moments because of COVID and the way that it fundamentally altered the world. So just want to take a quick second to acknowledge those people.
Of course.
So
what do you think you let go of? Like, you know, we are wound up tight, maybe a little bit too much, really too into the order of things and doing things a certain way. What do you think you let go of?
Actually, I got worse about that. Like, I was always the type of person that would arrive everywhere 20 minutes early. And now I'm the type of person who arrives everywhere like 2 to 3 minutes late, and it freaks me out. But I do think I let go a lot of my pride. I used to be really obsessed with being the best. And it wasn't enough that I was good at my job. I needed to be in Forbes 40 under 40. And I never made it. And it really bothered me until I got to the point of saying, if I did get Forbes 40 under 40, I doubt it would make me happy, because I started replacing those things with things that actually made me happy, like people and feeling comfortable and not obsessing constantly about, do I look okay? Is this thing I'm turning in great? It has to be perfect. It's not enough that people say that I'm good at my job. They need to say Andrew is the greatest employee we've ever had. And that's the main thing. I stopped trying to seek validation and happiness from my job. I let that go. Because the pandemic taught me, you know, God forbid something happened to you, there'll be another person in your seat like 2 weeks later. So, prioritize the people that you're not easily replaceable for.
And I mean, when my staff member died, you know, you get the email notification, you know, so-and-so has been terminated. And then you get the notification for your permission to recruit for that position, and the position is just a number and he's gone. Mm. And then you hire somebody else for that position. But what's been kind of strange is tracking that position number and seeing who's occupied that position number. I don't know. It's, you are replaceable as a employee. As an individual, you're not. Mm-hmm. And we still talk about this guy. We just talked about him the other day. Those are the parts that people remember. But the way that you achieved at work and what you did, people don't care about that, really. I think for me, I've become a bit more rebellious because I learned what my fears were. I'm not scared of people. I'm scared of conflict. I'm not shy. I just like to be comfortable in my surroundings. Yep. And until I'm comfortable, I don't engage. So I think letting go of the image of yourself that you thought you were has been big for me. We need to breathe a sigh of relief. Whew.
Yeah.
But now to a very pressing question that we alluded to at the top of this episode. Drum roll, please. Should T'Challa have been recast? I'll say that again just so we can cut. Should T'Challa have been recast?
Ooh.
I say no, but I'll let you weigh in.
Okay. I will give you my answer, but before I give you my answer, Chadwick Boseman, sadly, he was T'Challa in a lot of people's eyes. He was the lead character in Black Panther, one of Marvel's most celebrated movies that I've ever watched. And sadly, he died of colon cancer in real life. And then they were filming the sequel, and they decided that they weren't going to recast the main character from the first movie, T'Challa, who is the Black Panther. Something important for a context for people to remember is that this is based on comic books, and in comic books, people die and come back all the time. People die, and then and a clone or an alternate universe version of them come back. So they could have recast and just said, you know, this is the have you seen the What If show on Marvel?
I haven't.
Okay, so basically it's like, it's this view of that, like, there's all these different universes. Like, there's a multiverse that consists of all these different realms where the slightest tweak can change the storyline completely. And in one of them, Chadwick Boseman's character, T'Challa, actually becomes one of the Guardians of the Galaxy. So he's not there to live in Wakanda and grow up there. So they could have done something where they found another actor to play T'Challa, and he's from another one of the universes or another realms. Or they could have done something where his spirit, or he was in a fight, and then something changed his appearance or whatnot. By the end of the day, this isn't a comic book. This is real life. And it would probably be really tough to ask these actors to go on to this movie where the title character, the iconic guy, the person that they respected, admired, and loved is gone. And just pick up like nothing happened.
Who's about to leave a house to be T'Challa after Chadwick Boseman?
Exactly. Is my question. So I'm like, I see how they could have done it. There's lots of different ways they could have recast T'Challa.
Of course.
And did it in a storyline that stays within the Marvel realm of possibility and universe and all that.
Of course.
By the end of the day, as me, if I was directing, if I was writing this movie, T'Challa's gone. The Black Panther lives on because the Black Panther is a title. It is something that is inherited and earned. It is not something that is only one person. It is a hero. It is an avatar that people go into. And I think it's the same thing for this character. So T'Challa is Chadwick Boseman, and Chadwick Boseman is T'Challa. And in both the real world and this current incarnation of the Marvel world, T'Challa is gone, and we need to celebrate what's next. And I'm excited to see how they tell that story.
Wow, that's... I wasn't expecting that. I mean, that's why we do this, is like... Part of our scripts are written and part are just like, leave it open to see what the other person is going to say. That's a secret. Because what? You know how this stuff works. It's like a million podcasts. Duh. So, my long answer. When we think about iconic superheroes, when we think about our role models, we are working on decades of particular characters. I'm just going to take, for instance, James Bond. If anybody knows me, I'm a James Bond fan. I wrote like a 6-essay series on Substack. Yes, I'm a James Bond fan. So you had Sean Connery. You had George Lazenby. You had Roger Moore. All these people playing this iconic character. They got to run their tenure. They got to see the character through, make it their own, and retire from it and be able to reflect on it. You have Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, all these people who have played Batman, who again have had to make the character their own, retire from it, reflect on it. To have such important representation of a black superhero and have that character die, I don't think we're used to that in any way. Mm-hmm. We're not really used to the iconic black character, and we didn't think he was going to be taken away from us like this. So I think there's a collective trauma that we're experiencing about this that there's no way to bandage. And so we kind of have to bury him in a way that we didn't want to. And I think with your suggestion about a multiverse or whatever, you know, people are not going to be happy with anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that has to be closed. We can continue with the Black Panther story, and they can reboot it at another point with another actor, where now we can have this person make this role his own.
Oh, yeah. And let's be clear, that's exactly what they're going to do. They're just not going to do it now. The same way we've had, what, you and I have had four different people play Spider-Man in our lifetime.
They're still alive.
Yeah. And all of them are probably only separated by like 10 to 12 years between the four of them.
Exactly. Tobey Maguire is like 50 now. So I don't think that we can really navigate this type of situation with the right answer.
Yeah.
I know that they probably have clauses someplace morbidly in these contracts about whether, you know, when people die, what happens. But we don't anticipate like what's going to happen when someone beloved dies and what that's going to do to the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had to deal with that. So I think obviously we're going to go see it.
Oh, for sure.
That's a given. Someone suggested on Twitter, like, we wear all white, so I might go do that, too.
Just like in the trailer. That's a good point.
Oh, God.
It's going to be November, so I can't wear my all-white linen suit, but I'm going to find a nice white shirt and white pant, white jeans to wear with it.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's after Labor Day.
This is for an honor of Chadwick Boseman. And if you have you seen The Harder They Fall?
Yes, I loved it.
Did you see the name of the train in the beginning?
No, I didn't notice it.
If you look back when they first robbed that train in the beginning, the name on the train is C.A. Boseman.
Oh, wow. Chadwick, yes. His middle name was A something.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I was like, stop this. I don't want to cry today. So he's an iconic man, and he's a hero, and he's one of those people where he didn't have time to have scandal, so he's just angelic. You know, so it's, nobody's going to be happy. But I'm going to show up November 11th. It's already on my calendar. Probably not going to go to work that day, and we're going to turn up. That's all.
I mean, I already know, so just be prepared. I'm coming over that day.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to ride over there together, so
be for sure. Prepared. I mean, my husband wants to come, but with all due respect, you don't have to sit this one out, homie. I mean, like, he's a soy boy with sauce, but, you know, we got to do our thing. Because, was it, we saw the original Black Panther. It was me, you, and my real brother. Yeah, whatever that means. My blood brother.
Your biological.
Biological. Brother. Thank you. Whatever.
I'm your real brother, too. I'm not your biological brother, but, yeah.
So three of us went to go see it, and I didn't know this till later, but the two of them cried in the theater. But then I ended up crying in the shower later on. I don't know if I told you that.
No, you didn't.
So I was listening to the soundtrack, and then from All the Stars, the song All the Stars.
Yeah.
When she said, "All the stars are closer," it kind of just hit me. And I was like, oh, the ancestors. And I was like, damn. So I'm in the shower like, yeah. Oh, stars are closer. Yeah, so it's an emotional experience. It's going to be emotional again, but we're going to see it anyway.
Yep. Another layer to this is that as Black people in real life, we've seen our heroes taken from us.
That's
not,
right.
Not just that they die, they're taken from us.
Yes.
And we have so few people, we've traditionally had so few people that we could look to and be like, yes, this is ours, this is our leader, this is our hero. And rarely do they make it to old age. And then this is a case of a fictional hero, but in terms of, you know, the it's gotten like the age-old phrase now, but representation matters.
Yep.
The fictional hero that we've all turned to was taken from us because a disease robbed him of the last half of his life.
My God.
And that was part of the thing that just touched me when I was watching the movie. Because just remember being a kid and loving the X-Men and never really seeing myself in the X-Men and loving Spider-Man and pretending I'm Spider-Man. And then,
but you weren't really.
Exactly. Yeah. Because when I got to the age where I'm like, I'm into comics, but all of a sudden I realized the X-Men is basically just an allegory for the civil rights movement, and Magneto is Malcolm X, and Professor X is Martin Luther King, and mutants are Black people. When I got old enough to process that and realize that, and I started thinking to myself, you know, the only X-Men that remotely looks like me is Bishop, and he got that good hair, so you know he might...
Damn!
He got that S-curl activated in the future or something.
For real. So soul glow.
I don't see myself in him as much, but he's kind of cool. But, like, Black Panther, when I found that one, and it's a literal... I know the, you know, it's made in the 70s, and it's literally a Black superhero who's a person who gets his powers from the ancestors and is a protector of this super advanced nation that is free of colonialism. To see that on stage, something I never thought that I would see as a kid, it just got to me, and it was emotional. And yes, it's a Marvel movie at the end of the day. But a movie that, a story that can make you feel like that little 11-year-old kid again, that's something special. And it hurt to know that Chadwick wasn't going to be in the next one to see that again, or that my nephews wouldn't have the chance to see again the guy that looks like them be the hero.
Mm-hmm. And as someone who's on the side in healthcare, where I actually see those tumors, when you get colon cancer like that, that young, now I'm not a physician, but I will say that sometimes there's a genetic component to getting those types of cancers early. Mm-hmm. And to know what he went through with maybe surgery, maybe follow-up treatment, and to still be training and to still be filming, he really gave you his all, his all. You know, when it looked like he was tired, like he didn't want to do the salute anymore, I can't imagine how tired he was. Can't imagine how beat down, how many medications he might have been taking just to hold him up. And it's just like, it was a gift that he gave us. And I don't accept any criticism of the Black Panther movie at all. We're not taking opinions. One of my friends, and that's my homie, but he started on something. He was like, blah, 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 the graphics. And I was like, hold on, hold on. What we not gonna do?
let me tell you something, player. Let me tell you something.
Look. This movie is the story of my family. We'll just put it very simply. And people said, you know, the kiss at the end didn't have so much chemistry. And I'm like, I'll take half a point off for it. But it's still a 99.5.
I've just decided that if someone has something negative to say about the movie, I'll be like, okay, that's cool. And if they keep going, I'm like, yeah, so this is the last time you and I are having this conversation. So whatever. You're entitled to feel how you feel. But guess what I'm about to do? I'm going to watch Black Panther for the 37th time.
Yeah. Because,
you know, and by the time this movie comes out, it'll probably be my 52nd time seeing it, because I'm going to want to watch it like a bunch of times before just to remind me, and I'm going to get emotional. And yes, I'm bringing Kleenex to the premiere because I'm going to need it, because I'm going to cry when I see the all white linen suits looking like they're coming out of a Diddy party.
Oh my God. It's going to be too much, but we're ready for it.
Yeah.
We're not ready, but we're ready. We coming on the other side of just a wild ride these past 2 years. We're ready. Just go for it. There's nothing you can do. And we roll. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately that's what this return for us is about. It's what this episode is about, is the return. Is if you're going to do something, you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. If there's a way, you're going to find a way. And once we get there, we celebrate. We take all of our apprehensions away, our ego, our fears, and we put them aside because we're not here for very long. The time is very short, and it's always been, and we just didn't know that.
Man, you too.
I'm a writer.
I came here just expecting to have a quick conversation about some comic book movies, and you just like rip me open and make me start like processing stuff. And Siobhan, my appointment with my therapist is not until next Friday.
Oh.
Come on. I wasn't ready for this.
Listen, mine is out of office, so I need to do something.
Actually,
shout out to my therapist. We'll just say that. She is the best in the world, and I'm obviously her favorite. She's another person where I don't take opinions on. I was like on Google and I saw somebody had a negative review, and I went to an appointment. I was like, yo, so I was about to find this girl. Talk about some, you were rude. Yeah. Like, who is she?
Like now see, what we not going to do is talk about Miss G, because Miss G been holding me down. I don't know whatever problems you got, but Miss G's been nothing but supportive with me. So that's your problem. That's your issues. I think you might have had the wrong office, ma'am.
That's right. You ain't talked to her. Let me not, because she would not condone this. So I'm just going to shut my mouth. But shout out to my therapist. Love you.
Yeah. So I think that's a good place to end this episode. And just as a reminder, this is The Bleak Outlook. If you enjoyed this, please, please, please write a review. It's very helpful in making the show more discoverable to more people. Tell a friend to tell a friend, and we can be friends, in the immortal words
of
Mr. Sean Combs, who's going to lead the white party when we go to our Black Panther premiere. So follow us on social, the Bleak Outlook, and that's B-L-E-E-K, Outlook, and you can find us pretty much everywhere. Love you. Can't wait to see
love you
again.
Guys.
Can't wait to hear from you. Peace.
Peace.